Government Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this August the 28th on the West Coast, already August the 29th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. So nice to have you with us this evening. We're not going to waste any time tonight. Our guest is only going to be with us for 1 hour, and we have gotten into a habit of stretching this out to an hour and a half, 2 hours. And tonight we're going to be kind to him and to me. I've had a rough day. As some of you know, my cousin passed away a few days ago, and it's just been one thing after another, but that has been really a spiritually uplifting event to be around family members that I haven't seen for a long time, and to see the recognition that he has gotten from his friends throughout his life is just amazing. I didn't know anyone could have so many friends and not be a politician. We're going right into the topic of tonight's show. Our guest has been on Evident Footprints very recently. In fact, we discussed his book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and he has also written a number of well-known and best-selling books, one of which is Alien Agenda. He is a frequent guest on major shows like Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. I think he's been on with Art Bell and the rest of the gang, if I were to make an educated guess. And he is a noted lecturer at the annual Crash Retrieval Conference sponsored by Ryan Wood, as well as many of the other ufology conferences. And with that, I would like to welcome with open arms Mr. Jim Mars. Jim, good evening.
Always a pleasure to be with you.
I hope I didn't screw anything up on your introduction.
No. Hey, if you get my name right, that's good enough.
Well, you know what's funny? There's Tex Mars out there. I'm sure you're probably familiar with some of his work. And everybody always asks me.
I've spoken with him, yeah.
Yeah, are you related?
And I said, well,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Am I a Mason?
No. No, that's not what I said. I said, are you related to him?
I'm always asked.
I said, I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
No, I've spoken with Tex Mars, and, you know, it is kind of weird that two guys named Mars both live in Texas and both write about the New World Order and secret societies. But as far as we know, there's not any family connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had asked you that on another show. I get asked that all the time. And, of course, I hear that as well as when Tex is being interviewed. People ask him, are you related to Jim Mars? Maybe you guys ought to just hook up, you know?
Well, no, it's kind of funny because in talking with Tex, I find out that we both have Scotch heritage, and we're both aware of the Mars Castle in Scotland. And so, I don't know, I can't help but think it's somewhere, somewhere way back down the line, there's probably a crossover.
Well, you've been a busy guy. Your book is doing rather well. And
yes, I want to thank you, and I want to thank all your listeners, especially those who went out and bought a book, because thanks to you, my new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, which was only hit the bookshelves on June the 24th, has already hit the extended New York Times bestseller list.
Well, congratulations.
And thank you. You
didn't have to write a check to do that, did you?
Nope. In fact, there has been very little official formal publicity or promotion. It's just been your program and, of course, George Norrie, Jeff Rance, and a couple others, you know. But it got the word out, and apparently people are responding to what I've written.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, too. I get emails and calls from folks asking me, are you going to have him on again? And I said, well, he's on tonight. And they said,
right.
I mean, again, is he coming on again? And I said, well, as long as people are buying his books, I don't see why not. You know, as long as we're learning something, which...
That's right. Well, the thing that excites me, Don, is that, you know, I think, and we spoke about this a little bit the last time I was on, but, you know, I think most people understand that we've got some real problems in this country. In fact, this country, the United States, somehow has kind of seemed to have gotten off track, you know. I've always been real proud to live in the country that stops wars. We don't start wars. And we prosecute at Nuremberg people who torture people. You know, we don't allow that. But, oops, wait a minute, now we do. And now we're starting wars, unprovoked, you know, wars. And it's like, what's happening here? And I think it's important for people to start paying attention because everybody kind of realizes that we have a problem, but nobody quite can put their finger on who's responsible. The liberals blame the conservatives, and the conservatives blame the liberals, and the Republicans blame the Democrats, and the Democrats blame the Republicans. And I think it's important for us to begin to understand that the same financial forces are behind both parties. They are really offering us no real choice. If you vote for Barack Obama, his chief advisors is Zygmunt Brzezinski and his son, the head of the Trilateral Commission, the man who has admitted sending U.S. Special Forces and spooks into Afghanistan back in 1979, which provoked the Russian response and their incursion into Afghanistan. And now they're playing the same game by egging Georgia into their activities, placing 1,500 Blackwater mercenaries over there, and they're still and trying to place missiles there. You know, think what happened when Russia tried to place missiles off our shore in Cuba, just 90 miles. You know, we didn't put up with that. And yet when Russia responds over here, the control media, who are controlled by these same financial forces, are trying to paint Russia as the big bad wolf, you know, and it's, oh, they're just trying to take over everything. In fact, I've heard that all my life. Russia and the communists, of course, communism now has fallen, but still the Russians are trying to take over the world. And yet, Don, you know, you and I both know that with the collapse of the communist economic system, Russia voluntarily pulled their military out of Eastern Europe. Said, okay, Cold War's over. We'll just stay in place. And yet we are the ones, particularly under President Bush, who are now trying to ring Russia with missiles. And we've brought Poland and the Czech Republic into the NATO military alliance, and we're trying to bring Georgia in. I mean, all we got to do is think, what would we be doing if they were trying to bring Mexico and Cuba and Jamaica into a military alliance against us? Come on, man. We need to start thinking about what's really happening. So here you've got these New World Order bunch that are behind Obama, and behind McCain is Henry Kissinger, the Council on Foreign Relations, which was the progenitor of the Trilateral Commission. So you got the same folks running both ends of it. And then when you turn on TV and you see all the lights and the singing and the videos and the, you know, and the confetti and balloons. I mean, what a dog and pony show. It's just a distraction is all it is.
Yes. You know, and you brought up a couple of good points. You mentioned the bankers, and it's always follow the money, and that hasn't changed. We've got absolutely the same people in there. But in terms of the people who are in the government, we've got the same characters that were around in World War II. We've got the same...
Absolutely. Or their sons or grandsons. Yeah, in fact, let me tell you this quick story. You know, the last 8 years, we've gotten in this mess largely because of Bush appointees, Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, who was finally forced to step down. But if you go all the way back to Nixon, we find out that Nixon, one of the few things he did that everybody kind of agreed was a good thing, was that he opened up diplomatic relations with China. Well, that wasn't lost on Nixon. So he made a trip to Russia, and he came back talking about detente. I really think he was going to try to fulfill John F. Kennedy's wish, which was to end the Cold War. But it didn't happen because he got caught in Watergate and then, of course, resigned and had to appoint Gerald Ford as president. So we find that under Gerald Ford, his chief of staff was Dick Cheney, and his secretary of defense was Donald Rumsfeld. And they said, oh, no, we can't end the Cold War. The evil empire over there has hidden weapons of mass destruction. And the CIA, there was a little bit of a hoorah about that. The CIA said, well, we don't know that. How do you know that? And they said, well, we have our secret sources, but we can't tell you who it is. And so thanks to Rumsfeld and Cheney, the Cold War continued all the way through the Reagan years and all the way up to the Bush administration. These are the same guys. They've been promoting this. And who was it that was dead set on knocking off Russia and trying to take over all that territory but Hitler and the Nazis?
Mm-hmm. You know, you touched on something there with Richard Nixon, too. When Nixon resigned, you notice how fast they pulled George H.W. Bush out of there and sent him over to China to the embassy?
Right. So he didn't get caught in the backwash.
Yeah, that, and you know, we have this anomaly that caused Dan Rather to lose his job, and that was over the exposure of the documents from the National Guard, National Guard papers.
Right.
Well, they didn't want it known that he was over there in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. I've talked to people that saw him there. And he was working for
Bush or Kerry?
No, I'm talking about Bush Jr. W.
Oh, okay.
He was there working for a secret program that Nixon had established called SUMS, SUMS, and it was basically in the drug trade. And we know that's what how they make their money. I mean, it's been that way for 150, 200 years.
Exactly, going all the way back to the Opium Wars. This
yes,
is how
exactly.
These wealthy elite, they fund themselves. You know, I call it the God Syndicate. Guns, oil, drugs. Three largest money-making commodities in the world, and they're involved in all of them. And, of course, the nexus of that is the banking system.
Uh-huh.
For example, we've been in a war on drugs now since, I guess, the Johnson years, and yet, you know, drugs are just as prevalent today as they've ever been. You know, they scoop kids off the street and arrest them for smoking pot, and they arrest the coke dealers and the meth labs, but the main drugs just keep pouring on in. And I think you'd agree with me, if it was truly a war on drugs and we really wanted to stop the flow of drugs, all they have to do is go into the banking system, identify the drug money, and start drying it up.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
But
well, what they do is they bring it in. Yeah, they bring it in into the country, and then they invest it in real estate, and then they flip properties, and then they take the money, and they put it in offshore accounts.
Right.
But
and then they put people that they have blackmail evidence on into office, like Elliot Spitzer, who they made the governor of New York, and then earlier this year, when he had the effrontery to publish an article in the Washington Post pointing the finger at the Bush administration as being behind the collapse of the housing market, all of a sudden, oh, well, he was seeing a call girl, and he's out. That's another one of their classic methods. They won't let anybody in office that they don't have dirt on. And, for example, now, this is election year right now, if you'll stop and think about it, Barack Obama and John McCain are both media creations. 2 years ago, most people had never really heard of either one of them. And all of a sudden, they're the top dogs because that's what the media tells us, that they're the top dogs. So since they're media creations, they can be destroyed overnight by the media if the people in control want them to.
Yeah.
And,
well, I've been telling folks that we're now the media. You know, people say, well, when are they going to start reporting this? Don't expect them to. They're not about to sing a different song.
For example, I know you've already spoken out about the questions over Obama's citizenship. by some very good reports and very good evidence, he is really not qualified constitutionally to be president. Now, you would think that if the playing field was level and everything was as it, we are told it is, that the Republicans would be all over that. But you hadn't heard a word out of them.
And well, you got the same problem with McCain and Bush, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, we've proven that.
In 2004, the American voters voted a Democratic Congress. It was clear that they wanted a change and that they wanted some stuff to do other than the business as usual. And yet, right away, the Democratic leader, Nancy Pelosi, says, oh, no, impeachment's off the table. And the Democrats went ahead and voted on for every war bill to come up, even though in all discussion about how that the Iraqi war was based on 395 misstatements of fact, to be kind, lies, as we call them down here in Texas, that doesn't even get talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Jim, I don't mean to interrupt our conversation here, but we have another talk show host who is actually a host of her own show on Sundays here on BBS Radio, and it's called the Mission Possible. Reverend Roxy Hampton is on line three. Reverend Roxy, are you there?
Hi, Don. Yes, I am. I wanted to just say, Mr. Mars, oh my goodness, you're from my father's neck of the woods, Fort Worth, Texas. And that
Cowtown.
Is that right?
Cowtown.
Yes. But my question to you this evening on this eventful day, as some people are calling it, I find it to be the culmination of the King Alfred plan for articulate black people like myself who have been keeping the dream alive, have come to the hoop only to have a man shoot blanks. And my question to you is this. With having a Democratic candidate who has basically walked away from every type of idea in terms of conspiracy, a man who became senator by running against another black man from Virginia that was relocated in order to run against him, and a man who steps up to the plate and likens himself to the man who has given us the dream. Could you please tell me where we are as people who have been keepers of the truth of the news stand with this kind of man in the White House? I know how we stand with McCain, but how do you see us all faring in terms of 911 and in terms of COINTEL and in terms of all the things they really need to name and number before we have change?
Well, unfortunately, I think the only change that Obama's after is what's in your pocket.
Loose change, spare change.
Yeah, spare change.
But no, seriously.
No, well, seriously.
Where's
no, you
your
said
audience?
It yourself. You said it yourself, Reverend Roxy. We are the keepers
and that
of
is?
The truth. We are the keepers of the truth. And we're just going to have to keep on keeping on because the fight's not over yet because you're not going to see any great change taking place under Obama administration. They're going to go through the same motions. The push for the North American Union will continue. The Kennebec Superhighway, they'll find ways to circumvent the wishes of the people in the various states. Oklahoma's against it. Texas is against it. But they're going to figure out a way to get around us, and they're going to continue the whole thing. And it'll all be predicated on the war on terrorism, you know, because they have created that whole thing, and they're going to keep pushing it.
Yeah. I'd like to add, if I could add chump change to that, too.
Chump change. Chump change. No,
clothing.
Yeah. No.
I have one more question.
Okay.
I have one more quick question.
Go ahead, Roxy.
In terms of Texas, I know that its main concern is foreign policy, and I know that Obama has intimated that he would send 10,000 troops to Afghanistan. Can you enlighten me on why it is so important, and the listeners, as to why it's so important for us to pay attention to that particular fact one more time?
Okay, the reason that we have to pay attention to
that. And I'm going to hang up. I enjoy your show, Don.
Thanks for calling, Roxy. You take care, okay?
Oh, I have a scheme. See you later.
I have a scheme. I love it. No, we have to pay attention to Afghanistan because that's where the focus is going because we hadn't been able to make it work very well in Iraq, and so they got to get our mind off of that. So now the emphasis is shifting to Afghanistan, and now we're into another phase of what is known as the Great Game. And the Great Game has been going on for more than a century, and it's the object is who can gain control over the Caucasus oil fields in the Caucasus region and those nations over there, because whoever controls Afghanistan and Georgia and Uzbekistan and the rest of these places, Iran, that is at the heart of the pipelines, the oil and gas pipelines moving both east and west, and whoever controls that controls the petroleum of the world.
Mm-hmm. Am I missing something here, Jim? Am I missing something in what Obama said, that we should be pulling out of Iraq? We shouldn't be in Iraq. We shouldn't be in Afghanistan. I heard as many as 15,000 troops were to be sent there. Now, it seems to me that that sounds like a setup to move in on Pakistan.
Right. They are, and they're trying to surround Iran. They're still after Iran. But let's go back to Afghanistan for a moment because, Don,
sure,
you yourself brought up the fact that these wealthy elite that are trying to rule the world, one of their foundations is the drug trade. The Taliban, who I don't have anything particularly good to say about, but they were religious fanatics, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And in 2001, 2002, they had destroyed about 90% of the world's poppy fields, which is, supports the world heroin trade.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we went in there and took control and knocked out the Taliban, you would think, since we're in a war on drugs, that we would have very easily knocked out the other 10%, and we would have won the war on drugs, certainly at least in the area of heroin and the poppy fields. But instead, we have allowed those poppy fields to go back into production, acres and thousands of acres. And today, the poppy crop is expected to be at an all-time high. And now, that should tell any thinking person that there's something wrong going on here, because how can we say we're fighting a war on drugs over here, and yet when we had an opportunity to knock out the world heroin trade, we did not, and instead allowed it to rebuild?
Mm-hmm. How much do you think the pharmaceutical companies paid our government to go invade Afghanistan?
Well, now you're getting down to actually who runs the show. And the pharmaceutical companies all trace their heritage back to the IG Farben chemical combine and drug combine. In fact, back in the 1800s, IG Farben was actually marketing heroin under that name as a painkiller.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, and it all goes back to, and who was in charge of the IG Farben combine? The Nazis.
Yeah, and you know, I've heard, and I feel it's important to mention this, on another network, we won't even name the network, but there's a couple of talk show hosts that are seem to be pushing an agenda that this is all fiction, that this is imagination, that this is old hat, that this died with Nuremberg, and you get the meaning of what I'm saying. And
absolutely. There's a person who posted a review on Amazon to my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and all they had to say was, there is no conspiracy, there is no conspiracy, there is no conspiracy. And I had this mental picture of someone standing there with their eyes shut and their fingers in their ears, saying, there is no conspiracy, there is no conspiracy. I mean, you know, if that's what you want to believe, I'm the last person to dissuade you from your rosy and comforting little worldview. But if you just simply look at the facts and the information, there is a conspiracy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the things, you know, Jim, I had no idea you were writing the book you wrote, and I'm not, this isn't tooting my own horn, I'm just making a point here. I was down the rabbit hole looking for stuff on the Federal Reserve. My interest was to see what time this actually started cooking, if you know what I mean. When did these guys actually start entering the country? And I found that, and then I saw how it tied into Tesla and how it tied into who these people were. And these are, again, the major players today, the ones that are wreaking all the havoc around the planet. And then you came out with your book, and I'm not saying that I don't think you were even aware of what I was writing at the time.
No, I was not. And the thing is, I think what you're trying to say is, it's not like we're, and yet we both probably been accused of this, that we're just copying each other and repeating all this stuff. No, I was not aware of you. You were not aware of me. And yet, when you follow the evidence, you come to the same conclusions, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we can carry on a conversation about this, and we're agreeing with each other on the basis of what we've seen. Now, from reading your material, I've learned a lot, but I've also seen many things that I've found, you know, and I'm sure you read some of my things, you're going to see the same thing.
The reason for that, Don, is that we're both looking at the same evidence. It's just there. You know,
yes.
You can deny it. You can deny it. You can say there's no conspiracy, and you can say, I don't want to hear about that, but it's just there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And we can't change the facts.
Yes. What I wanted to say is the truth is finally being revealed. And they had never expected that to happen. They had never
counted on
this.
That's correct. And largely because they felt like they had pretty monopolistic control over the mass media in this country. And what they had not counted on was the sudden, unexpected growth of the Internet. And which then led to alternative talk shows like yours. And now there are people who are becoming aware and are beginning to figure out what's really going on. And again, it's not about Democrats or Republicans, and it's not about conservatives or liberals. It's about fascists, and that the dictionary definition of fascism is the combination of state and corporate power. And that's exactly what we have in this country today. And the only difference between what happened in Nazi Germany and what's happening today is that in Nazi Germany, Hitler and the state gained control over the corporations with the help of the financiers and the industrialists and people running the giant corporations who placed him in power. And that combination resulted in fascism in Nazi Germany. In modern America, the corporations have gained control over the state by corporate power and by their lobbying money, but the end result is the same. You've got this combination of state and corporate power, which is the dictionary definition of fascism. And today we see fascism going. It'll also tell you in the dictionary that it's not only the combination of state and corporate power, but this is pushed along by nationalism, okay? My country, right or wrong, you're with us or against us. If you try to criticize what's going on, you must be on the side of the terrorist. And we see this happening just last night, as a matter of fact, in New York. A fellow got up to go use the bathroom, and they were singing God Bless America, and a cop stopped him and said, you can't leave right now. And he said, well, I don't care about God Bless America. I got to go to the bathroom. And they basically arrested him, and they threw him out of the game, threw him out of Yankee Stadium. Now, is that America? Is that the America that we fought World War II for? Is that the America that we have all been brought up under our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our freedom, our individual liberty? I don't think so.
No
that
wonder the Yankees are losing. Oh, my God.
I know. It's just incredible what's going on. And this, you know, having flown recently, it's getting to where I don't even want to fly anymore. And it's not because of flying. Yes, the airlines are in trouble and they're having problems. And I had to pay $15 just to check a bag. It's excuse me. And, of course, and then I don't get anything on the plane, not even the peanuts. But so I understand the commercial problems, the business problems that the airlines are having, but that's not the real problem in flying today. The real problem is trying to get through security. Trying to get through security. Well, yeah, okay, I'm all for security. And when they came in, made everybody go through an X-ray machine, I grumbled, but I, you know, okay, maybe there's some reason for that. But when, and I have actually seen this myself, when they are searching 2-year-old children and pulling off their backpacks and going through and making people take off their shoes, this has nothing to do with security. This is about fascist power and control.
Yeah. And they're strip searching 80 and 90 year old people too. I mean, we hear reports about that.
If
they don't kill them through tasing, you know.
Yeah, and then when you resist and say, "Excuse me, I'm a free American, you can't do this," then they hit you with the taser. You know, it's just incredible. And by the way, at Nuremberg, the most prevalent defense by all of these Nazi officers and concentration camp guards and everything else accused of murder and beatings and torture, they said, well, you know, it wasn't my fault. I was only following orders. And we made it very plain that, hey, following orders is not good enough. There comes times when you have to use your own moral compass, and you have to make your own decisions, and you will be held accountable for your own individual actions. And yet now, just recently, a federal court ruled that the people who were torturing people at Abu Ghraib and at Guantanamo, well, they can't be held accountable because they were just following orders. The same defense those Nazis tried to use. Where are we, folks? We better start waking up.
You know, there's you mentioned Nuremberg twice now, and I can guarantee you in a forthcoming, the third part of my Three Stooges article, which I'm going ahead with. I mean, Hillary's temporarily out of the picture, but I'm not counting her out yet. And in fact, I planned on a three-parter for that purpose. Right before all this stuff happened, I knew one of them was going to be waiting in the wings there, because there's a game going on, and you can see it coming out in a few different ways. Phil Berg, who filed a lawsuit against Obama about his citizenship. Now, I agree in principle, but he's a Clinton supporter. And I even interviewed him, the first question I asked him is if he was doing this under his own volition or acting as an agent for someone else. And he told me it was the right thing to do. It was his decision. No one else influenced it. Huh. Do you believe that, Jim?
I don't know. I really don't know, but I'll tell you, I do remember seeing or reading that Berg said that he's doing this not as any attack on the Democrats, but simply to try to save the Democrats the embarrassment and the money of having to backtrack once it's been proven and everyone's aware that Barack is constitutionally unqualified to be president.
Well, what would be the result of him saving the money? In the end, they would bring Hillary on board, wouldn't they?
Right, but that is yet to happen. We don't know that's going to happen. Maybe they feel comfortable with Barack, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because I can remember in one of his early writings, Barack Obama wrote that if the going gets tough, I will side with the Muslims. So, you know, maybe he's doing exactly what they want him to do. See, again, it's all based on fear. It's fear-based, you know. We got to worry about the terrorists. We got to worry about all these people. We got to worry about Russia. Everybody's out to get us, okay? Now, what is that? That's Nazi tactics. Listen to what Hermann Göring, the head of the German Luftwaffe and one of the highest officials of Nazi Germany at Nuremberg, he said, voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. This is easy. All you have to do is tell them they're being attacked, and then denounce the pacifist for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. Doesn't that sound exactly like what's happening right now? If you try to say, wait a minute, we don't want to torture people. Wait a minute, why are we having to do all this security at the airport? Wait a minute, what's going on here? Then people, they turn and point to you and say, well, you must be siding with the terrorists. You must want Osama bin Laden to win. Well, excuse me, where is Osama bin Laden. You know, we have satellites and we have all this electronic surveillance. They can monitor overseas telephone conversations. They can monitor our telephone conversations. I guarantee you somebody's listening in right now to your program, okay, and taking notes.
They
know where everybody is, okay? And if you don't believe me, just try not paying your taxes. They'll be right on your doorstep. So they can find out where each and every one of us are. But 8 years, they can't find Osama bin Laden? Give me a break.
Yeah. Maybe the key is for me to invite him onto my show and interview
him. There you go. Yeah, get his side of it, you know? The FBI has actually come out and admitted that they're not looking for Osama bin Laden in connection with 9/11 because, quote, we have no hard evidence that he was connected to 9/11, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think the real culprits of 9/11 are much closer to home. In fact, I saw a bumper sticker the other day that I think sums it up. It said, "Impeach the terrorist."
That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
That's a good one. And where can one get that bumper sticker, I'm wondering?
I don't know. I just saw it, but that really struck me, you know. Because I want to tell you something. I don't feel like I'm doing anything unpatriotic. I particularly remember hearing President Bush on the evening of 9/11 in one of his interviews or one of his talks, and he said something to the effect of, he said, "We must not rest until we find out who's responsible for this and see that they're punished." Well, hey, I took him at his word, and I only feel like that I'm following my president's wishes and desires. I want to find out who is responsible. I want to see them punished. The problem is that when you put aside that bogus 9/11 commission report, which didn't even bother to mention Building 7, the third building that collapsed that day, and is obviously an incomplete and abusive report, then you start following the real evidence, the money trails, the FBI agents who were prevented from turning in the reports about these Arabs that were taking flight lessons, people around the world who tried to warn us of what was going to happen and nothing was done about it, and all of a sudden you realize that the real perpetrators of 9/11 seem to be homegrown. The trail leads right back here, not over to the Middle East, not over to Germany, not over to any other nation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that same person that you just quoted also made a statement that the terrorists, and I got to paraphrase it, but he said something to the effect of, the terrorists never stop thinking of ways to destroy our country, and neither do we.
That is exactly what President Bush said. And, of course, you know, his supporters would say, well, he just misspoke himself. And I'm sure he did, but frankly, I think it was kind of a Freudian
slip.
Yeah.
The
same type of Freudian slip that caused Donald Rumsfeld in an interview with Parade Magazine to say the two planes that hit the World Trade Center and the missile that hit the Pentagon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He actually said that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm sure he would say, well, I just misspoke myself. But, again, I think it was a Freudian slip.
Yeah.
Because there's so much going on there.
It's funny, Jim, that you mentioned the pilots that were in training. And of course, you had this story that came out. Well, they were only, this is fiction. They were only taking lessons in how to fly. They didn't, take off and fly. What is it, crash? and they didn't know how to land. And they were all incompetent, yet they were able to pull this off. Now, there's a unit that's operating somewhere in the vicinity of Mesa, Arizona, This occurred 4 or 5 months ago, and it was discussed on Michael Herzog's show quite a bit. Michael had gotten a call from someone that was interested in finding out who was causing all the ruckus at their apartment complex. And it was a group of Middle Easterns that were taking flying lessons at an airport in the Mesa, Arizona area. And some research was done on who owned this company by yours truly, and it was a Belgian company that actually owned the airport. Don't you find that interesting that someone can come in an area like that that is under the terrorist watch all the time? You've got foreign countries training more pilots. And there were supposedly somewhere between 100 and 150 of these individuals being trained there.
Well, you know, I would be willing to bet that if you would track the Belgium company and find out who is the actual owners and the people who actually control that company, not just the president or some front man official, but the people who actually own that company, you'd probably find that they're members of the Bilderbergs.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now, again, we just have to, first off, there was a British member of parliament who said that Al-Qaeda, which literally translates as the base, and me and probably a lot of other people, for the longest time I thought, well, they're referring to their home base, you know. No, he says that refers to the CIA computer database of Arab mercenaries and agents that they have on their payroll that they can order out and get them to do anything they're told to do. And again, I bet you would find some of those people taking flight lessons would fit into that category. Now, we have to use our common sense about some of this stuff because we are not getting the straight of it or from the media. In fact, the story about the 9/11 Arab pilots that wanted to learn how to take off and fly, but they said, no, we don't need to learn how to land. I mean, that's a bogus story. But it's perfect disinformation, because people hear that, they repeat that, and then they're told, well, no, that's bogus, that didn't happen. So then they tend to write out all the good information, such as they were incompetent to fly those planes, which they were. Hani Hanjour, who they claim was the pilot of the Flight 77 that flew into the Pentagon just a few weeks earlier, had been denied permission to rent a Cessna because he was incompetent. He couldn't fly it. And yet we're told he takes a 757 wide-body jet, dives, and makes an 180-degree circling, diving, curving
U-turn. Yeah.
And then levels off at ground level at full throttle and goes into the Pentagon. I mean, I've talked to experienced pilots, and they said, you know, I'm not even sure I could do that. And besides that, in that instance, and also with the planes in New York, pilots who have flown those very same aircraft say that they were exceeding their design limits. Whoa, how can you do that? Because those airplanes are run by computer, and they have essentially, I guess, what you could call a governor that prevents them from making too sharp a turn or too steep a dive for the safety and comfort of the passengers. So to be able to make those maneuvers, you have to overcome the computer flying the aircraft, and you have to exceed the design limits. And it's just, that's not possible under human control. And then we get stories like, and here's one that is absolutely true. They reported this in the days and hours following 9/11. They said Mahata Atta, who was head of this crew that, flew the planes into the World Trade Centers, that he had rented a car, and they found his rental car at Boston Airport, and in the back seat was a suitcase, and in the suitcase were flight manuals and a Koran, and, you know, all this evidence that's like, yeah, he was a fanatic Muslim, and he did it. But then all you got to do is think about it. Now, wait a minute. If he was a fanatical Muslim and he went off on a suicide mission, why does he take a suitcase? And you go, well, he wanted to be able to pass as a normal passenger. Okay, then why did he leave it in the car? It was planted. It's so obviously planted evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the bunch you just were talking about, Mohammed Atta and his crew, the night before, according to the Boston Globe, were not praying to their God in preparation for their suicide mission. They were out on the town smoking, drinking, and looking for hookers.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't sound like devout Muslims to me.
No, yeah, not at all. And which window of the plane do you think he threw his passport out before before he hit the building?
That's another one. That's another one. And, of course, that turns out to be somewhat of a phony story because it was not Mohammed Atta's passport they found. It was another of the hijackers, but the end result's still the same. We're told these planes were just, you know, vaporized with this intense fire that was so intense it melted a modern steel-reinforced building, and yet his paper passport somehow fluttered down and was found on the streets in New York. Again, planted evidence. And
all
of course,
the
my
jets,
problem...
You know, all the jets over the years that have crashed into the ground and burned did not melt.
No. No, aviation and military and aerospace writer for some years, and I've been to more than my fair share of plane crashes, and they're a mess, but nothing just burns up. There's pieces everywhere. And that to me is a critical point to the whole 9/11 mysteries and controversies. If Flight 77 indeed smashed into the Pentagon and caused all the damage and the death, then simply show me a picture of the wreckage. You know, every plane crash, they take wreckage to a big hangar and they reassemble it to find out exactly what happened. And they take pictures of it, and those pictures are generally made public. So show me a picture of the wreckage. The FBI, by the way, has admitted that the wreckage is in a warehouse somewhere. And why'd they admit that? Well, because early on, they said those planes were just vaporized, you know, just melted, and there was nothing left. Not even the tail, not even the wings, not even those 6-ton engines, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then about a week or so later, they came out and they said, however, they had identified all the victims of that flight by their fingerprints.
Well, yeah, they said DNA, too. I'm sure they were able to see.
Yeah, well,
find the DNA in the dust.
I guess so, but they can't find the engine. Or if they have it, they won't show us a picture of it. It's pretty simple, folks. Show us a picture of the wreckage. Got to be something. Yeah. Those wheel assemblies are huge. Those jet engines are tight. Have the fan blades and some of the inner parts are titanium steel. That's not going to melt.
Yeah.
They're bright.
Now, you remember, speaking of the Pentagon, do you remember seeing the video of, they look like CIA agents, but Lord knows who they were working for. Maybe they were NSA, carrying little pieces of a fuselage across the lawn, right there in the vicinity of the hole.
And they have used that quite effectively, especially early on. They show those pictures, and here's a little strip of metal line here and a little curled-up piece over there. And they say, see, there's the pieces of the airplane. But here's the problem, Don. The first responders, the truly first responders, there were some firemen already on the road, and they veered off and vectored over to the Pentagon, and then people on the highway were also stopped, see what was going on. And many of them had digital cameras. And they took pictures right there early on, I mean minutes after it happened. And guess what? Those pieces of metal aren't inside. They're not there. So instead of these guys in suits picking up metal and taking it off, maybe they were delivering the metal and setting it down somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's it's amazing what...
Oh, it is. And the thing is, here's where we are. Where are you right now? What city are you in, Don?
Well, I'm in northern Ohio, close to Cleveland.
Northern Ohio. Well, let's take Ohio. If the state police Cleveland, the Cleveland police, if they become corrupt and there's crimes and being committed, then what do? You call the Ohio State Police, and they'd come in and investigate, and if charges were warranted, then they would file charges and clean the thing up. But what if the Ohio State Police becomes corrupt and criminal? Then what do you do? Well, you send for the FBI, and the FBI comes in, and they investigate, and if there's charges to be brought, they would do that and clean it up. But what if the FBI becomes corrupt and criminal? Who will watch the watchers? Who will guard the guards? You know, it's a problem. And, of course, we're not supposed to even talk about that or think about that. That's just conspiracy theory. And yet, I guess my problem is I've lived too long, and I cut my teeth on the Kennedy assassination. And then I learned all the intimate details of Watergate. And then I looked into Iran-Contra. And then I looked into Waco. And in all these instances, there are demonstrable acts, criminal acts, acts against the law committed by the FBI. And yet nothing gets done about it. In fact, all that happens is another incident happens, and they bring in the FBI. And there's no one in Washington, it appears, who has the fortitude to stand up and say, who will watch the watchers?
Yeah, that's the crux of the whole matter right there. We all say that. Well, I guess we should.
Right, and we look to the political process to try to correct things, and yet, as I pointed out earlier, in 2004, during that election, when the control of Congress was returned to the Democrats did nothing. They supported the war policies. They supported the increased defense and intelligence spending. They supported the corporate initiatives for tax cuts for the rich. You know, I mean, it's, nothing changes because they are the same people control both ends of it, and they mm-hmm. play both ends against the middle. And
yes.
These people are the, when you go back far enough, you say you got interested in the Federal Reserve, then you know how the Federal Reserve was created, and you know that one of the creators, in fact, the first head of the Federal Reserve was a fellow by the name of Paul Warburg. Mm-hmm. Well, Paul Warburg came from Germany. And during World War One, it was Paul Warburg, as head of the Federal Reserve System, who also was in charge of the funding for our war effort in World War One. His brother, Max Warburg, was head of was an official with the German Central Bank and was involved in intelligence. In fact, one of those that helped put Lenin on a SEAL train and send him through wartime Germany to Russia to pull Russia out of the war. And Otto Warburg was also on the board of directors of IG Farben, which then became one of the largest supporters of Hitler. And Otto Warburg was also on the board of directors of the Hamburg America Steamship Line, which during the war and after the war was identified as the key source for Nazi spies and Nazi propaganda coming in the United States. And with Otto Warburg on the board of Hamburg America Steamship Line was Prescott Bush, the
mm-hmm.
grandfather of our current president. Now you
yeah.
see how the business ties all tie together, and they cross international lines.
Yes.
The International
now,
Monetary Fund has funded.
Yeah, my research showed that George Herbert Walker actually brought all of those people together and enabled the Harriman, Brown Brothers Harriman, to make that purchase.
Right, and that's because the Bushes had gone to work for the Harrimans and were their proteges. The Harrimans used the Bushes as their, foot soldiers. They're the ones that actually did out the work. And Prescott Bush, of course, as a director of Union Banking Corporation, was then in charge of handling the the flow of money from Fritz Thyssen, who admitted that he was the chief funder of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. So, I mean, most people don't care about all these details. And they don't want to go back into World War One. They don't want to look at World War Two. So let's just look at the world today. We have the grandson of a man. Prosecuted as a financial frontman for Hitler and the Nazis by the government of the United States in the middle of World War Two, who is now sitting as President of the United States. We have mm-hmm. as governor of our most populous state, California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, whose father, Gustav, was a Nazi party official. We have Karl Rove, who is widely known as Bush's brain. His grandfather built concentration camps for the Nazis and was a party member. And, unbelievably enough, we have a sitting pope who, as a young fellow in Poland, was a member of the Hitler Youth. So, I mean, it's like, who won the war anyway? And, of course, the rich people, do they drive around in Chevys or Fords? No, they all drive Mercedes. And take a look at our, and take a look what our soldiers look like today. They're wearing German helmets and German, and the same type of camouflage that that spotty camouflage like the Waffen-SS wore, and they carry body armor. And look at the changes that has trickled down into our police forces. When I was a young man, the cop wore blue, and we were all taught that he was our friend. He was there to serve and protect. And if you had a problem, go look up a policeman. And today, they wear black body armor and German-style helmets and all kinds of gas masks and radios and surveillance equipment and taser guns and everything else. And most young people, it's like, watch out for the cops. You know, where did we get to
and
that?
And don't forget the combat boots, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no more soft gum shoes.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly. Yeah, they
it's
sound
just amazing. You just look all around you, and you can just see the stench of fascism growing in this country, and yet most people aren't even aware of it. And when you try to tell them about it, they say, "I don't want to hear that. You must be un-American." And you know, Don, and you've done your study, so I think you'll agree with me on this. This is the same procedure that happened in pre-war Germany, right?
Mm-hmm.
The conservatives were all for it. They thought it was good for business. And everybody else said, well, I don't want to stand up and cause a problem, so I'm not going to say anything. And then as it went along, as anybody who tried to be critical about what was happening, then they were against the fatherland, and they were rounded up by the Gestapo. And after a while, everybody was fearful to say anything. And the next thing you know, their cities were being bombed day and night, and they were in the middle of a war.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody wants to get to that kind of situation, so let's put a stop to it right now.
You know, this term homeland that they came up with, and homeland security.
Well, they couldn't very well call it fatherland security, but they got as close as they could.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, who thought that name up? Who do you think thought that up?
I don't know. Do you?
I would guess H.W. thought it up if I didn't know any better.
Yeah, Dad.
Yeah, he's
exactly.
Known. He's got a nickname, the Old Kraut, amongst his friends.
Whoa! Well, wait a minute. Listen, just within the past month, over in Germany, there was a big ceremony where Henry Kissinger presented George Herbert Walker Bush with a big humanitarian award and said he was the most honored man in Germany because of his work in uniting Germany, okay? And this hug fest was conducted at the Wannsee, the very location where they had the Wannsee conference, where they laid out the plans for the extermination of the Jews and the final solution. Now, do you really think that was just sheer coincidence?
Oh, no, not at all. Now, before we end the show here tonight, there's one more issue I want to bring up, and this is related to some of the criticism, and I truly want to say that it's very unwarranted and very unfair criticism about your work, and that's that when you're describing the Nazis, you're not describing German people. You're not describing.
No, the German people got sandbagged and blindsided just like we are. When I talk about Nazis, the Nazi is an acronym for a national socialist. And a national socialist wants socialist programs, but confined within a national boundary. And when I'm talking about Nazis, I'm not talking about black-clad, swastika-bearing, goose-stepping Germans. I'm talking about national socialists, people who want to use fascism to bring everybody under the control of national socialist programs. And when you look around us, and when you look at what is now being called neocons, okay,
mm-hmm.
which is short
yeah.
for neoconservatives, right? When you hear the word neocon, just think Nazi, because they are national socialists. And, of course, being national socialists, they'll lie, steal, cheat, kill, do whatever's necessary to achieve their ends. And that's why they have been so successful in disarming the constitutional conservatives in this country and even the religious right by claiming to be neoconservatives. We're conservatives. Well, you know, all the conservatives I know down here in Texas, they want less government. They want a balanced budget. They want border security. They want to support family values. And yet they go vote for Bush and the Republicans, and they've gotten none of that. And they're confused. They can't quite understand. Of course, they can't bear the thought of voting for Barack Obama or the Democrats because they are painted as the big liberals and the big socialist-leaning people, which that's very true. So it's leaving the true conservatives scratching their head. They can't figure out what's going on. And I'm going to have to sign off here, but what we do here is it's time for all of us free Americans or people who believe in the Constitution, people who believe in the Bill of Rights, people who believe that we can all exist as freeborn Americans, black, white, red, yellow, Jews, Christians, Muslims, we can all get along just fine if we all stand up and agree that we have to go back to constitutional republicanism, and we have to point the finger at the people who've caused all this problem, and that is the National Socialists or the Nazis.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Well said. And I agree. Jim, thank you so much for being on Evident
Footprints. Thank you so much, Don. When both of us are feeling better, maybe we'll do this again some evening.
Okay, well, we'll get you booked sometime for September here, and I want to recommend your book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, to the listening audience. Also, visit Jim's website, jimmars.com, and have your speakers on when you go there. Jim, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Don. Have a good evening.
All right, you too. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. Our special guest, Jim Mars, will be back in the future, and I recommend his book highly. If you want to understand what's going on today, he has put together a marvelous piece of work, and he's very deserving of your support. Anyway, that's how he earns his living, believe it or not, is by reporting the truth. He's got many other books posted on his website and in fine bookstores nationwide. So I encourage you to check him out. In the meantime, I'm going to say goodnight to everyone. Special thanks to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and, of course, thanking you, my listening audience, for tuning in tonight, and look for us again tomorrow night. We've got great guests lined up for the coming month, and you don't want to miss many of the shows. I've booked Bill Deagle for a couple of shows, and we're going to be talking about a lot of the illnesses that are going around, as well as the issue of vaccines and basically whatever comes to mind. So be sure to be tuning in also in the month of September. In the meantime, I want to wish everyone a wonderful, peace-filled, love-filled, and light-filled good night.